It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's already October 13th and 14th, depending on when you're listening to this. Last weekend was Columbus Day weekend. There were a number of road races. My wife Ellen and I did too. We did the Hopkinton Lions 5K road race. That's one of my favorites because when I got into running as a citizen and competitive racing, so-called, but it's not for me being competitive, but just running in road races, that was the very first race I ever did, so it has a warm spot in my heart. We had a nice little turnout. And then on Sunday, it was the Northeast Delta Dental New England Half Marathon from Loudoun to Concord, and there was a great turnout, and we've taken over the presenting sponsorship of that because from a wellness perspective, I think it's much better for a dental oral health company as opposed to a beer company to sponsor a road race, although runners like their beer, no worries there. So anyway, so that was a lot of fun. And then this weekend, if you're listening to this on Saturday, October 13th, it's Missy's Hope, a fundraiser that raises money for an investment in preventing domestic violence situations, and that's at Missy's Hope is down in Manchester, and that's 10 o'clock on Saturday. So on the topic of running and athleticism and wellness, with me this weekend is Liz Durant, who's a famous athlete in the area and trainer and so forth. So Liz, I know your topic today is empty nest and the full life. And believe me, when done right, empty nesting is great. So I'm gonna give you my bias. But why don't you tell us about your background in wellness? Obviously, you've taught many classes. I know we run into you a lot at Storms Fitness in Hopkinton, as well as for a while, you also did things at NHTI and at Northeast Delta Dental, but you have a whole robust career playing sports and so forth. So why don't you get into that, and then we'll get into the empty nest.
Sure. Thank you so much, Tom, for having me this afternoon. I also want to give a quick plug that it is also Vulcan's Fury this weekend, sponsored by Acidotic Racing, which is a great trail race that has a short and a long course and very challenging for those people who love to be out on the trails this time of year, which has just been spectacular for the majority of the fall. So,
and that's located
out in Pawtuckaway State Park.
Which is we used to do a race in the fall, later in October, down there, a 5K. That's such a wonderful area, and it's pretty famous. And so Chris and the Acidotic team will be doing that. And like you say, there are two courses, so if you don't want to do the longer one, you have an alternative.
Absolutely. And as you said, Chris Dunn, who's been a guest on your show several times, who is also a coach that I work with, he is the founder of Acidotic Racing. And so he is the one that's the race organizer and sponsor of that race. And I think it is a very challenging race for those people who love to be out on the trails.
And yeah, I've had Chris on the show. And of course, a lot of the races that I've done in the mountains, like the Felt Race and the one at Loon and so forth, you know, Chris has been very involved. And the slower I get, Liz, the more I like mountain running, because like you kind of just hiking up a little bit more than a jog, so it's like it actually fits well into the slower runner, to be honest.
It really does, and it makes for great cross training. It makes a great transition for those of us who can't be on the road 100% of the time anymore, because our bodies don't love to be on the road 100% of the time. So, and I have to say, we are so blessed with the trails that we have just in our immediate area that we've been out exploring on the majority of them this year, because we've had several in our group training for ultras, including the Vermont 50 and things like that. So when I say we're out for hours, and to have them right outside our door. And that's almost a shout out and thank you to all those people who are really instrumental in helping to identify and build those trails out for, and that network of trails out for all of us recreational athletes and runners and walkers who like to enjoy them.
It's so true. We're blessed. You know, even around, you know, the Concord, our campus, Delta Dental Insha, you can get some trail racing. Obviously, in Hopkinton is the Mass Yard. We put on a race now in the Mass Yard every year now for the past several years. And, of course, my guest last weekend was Rob Levy, who is connected me with the fact that they're all of the different museums in New Hampshire are now promoting the trails in between the museums. So like you can stop at the Wright Museum in the Lakes region to learn about World War II history and then jump on a trail and run. So it's kind of interesting how Rob And he's an ultra, like you, he's an ultra marathon person, so he's been doing a lot of that. So at age 40, you took up competitive running. You've completed 23 marathons, including Boston. So why did you, you were always an athlete, of course, but in terms of getting into the running scene, both on the roads and trails, what precipitated that? And then how did you get into personal training and nutrition coaching?
Sure. And I don't want to spend too much time talking about myself and instead talk about all of the listeners who may be interested in this particular subject, because it is somewhat personal. Just a quick background is I did grow up playing, soccer and lacrosse, swimming, tennis, golf, pretty much any and all sports that were not only competitive, but also recreational. I grew up in a family that had a love for things like tennis and golf as life sports. And so I was very fortunate to be exposed to them very early in life and continue to play them. And then when I graduated from college, of course, went into the professional working world in Boston. And after that, we moved around the country pretty steadily about every 2 years for about 17 years. And so I spent a lot of time getting to know a lot of different areas across the country. And through that, started to do a little bit more running because I found it a great way to connect with other people. And when we arrived in Texas, I started to find some running groups that were doing some distance running. And that's how I sort of got into the marathon piece at a little bit later in age, maybe, than a lot of other people. But certainly enjoyed it from the minute I did my first Dallas White Rock Marathon. I was lucky enough to qualify for Boston on my first marathon, which doesn't happen very frequently. But I felt very lucky because it's not easy to get to Boston these days from a qualifying perspective. And so since then, I've done five, along with a lot of other marathons across the country. I've now moved into trail and ultra marathons for the most part, mostly because my body likes the trails a little bit better. I still enjoy a lot of the endurance sports and have completed, a couple half Ironmans and things like that. But I have to say trail running is my current passion, if you will. And I'll be competing in the Stonecat Trail Marathon in early November down in Ipswich, Massachusetts, which is another great trail marathon down there.
Impressive. And of course, you do personal training and Pilates and things like that. So thank you for helping us continue to establish the wellness culture in New Hampshire. Very impressive. And of course, like me in the past, you serve on a school board, the Hopkinton School Boards, and you've been chair. So let's get right into our topic. Empty nest, full life. So, of course, all of us who've had kids and then they go off to college, you have that melancholy. I mean, a lot of us for years, probably from like fourth grade to 12th grade, you're following them around in soccer games or lacrosse games or Boys and Girl Scouts, whatever. And so you feel like you have a purpose that sort of goes away when they go off to college and then off out of the house completely and work. So why don't you describe that and we'll talk about, what is so-called empty nest syndrome and how can we sort of transform that really into an opportunity? Because as I sort of hinted, like once my four kids became established young adults, I actually enjoyed being an empty nester, but proceed.
Sure, absolutely. And again, this was sort of a personal journey for me as well as working with a lot of clients. And I do teach fitness classes in the area, both at the Health Club of Concord. I do still teach over at NHTI. I've taught at Northeast Delta Dental in the past, as well as out at Storms at the Y, Center for Health Promotion. And I do most of my personal training over at Jeremy's Boot Camp on Manchester Street. So
you cover all the arenas there.
I try to. And as a result, I've worked with a lot of different people at various stages in their adult lives. And as I transitioned closer to becoming an empty nester when our youngest went off to college a year ago, August, I started to really become interested in sort of that transition to what next. From a health perspective, it really can change the way that you approach things. I know a lot of us through the years sort of become very focused on raising our children. And I want to wrap in there too, even taking care of older parents. There are a lot of responsibilities and things that take up a lot of time as we transition out. But I think one of the biggest transitions is when our children grow up and move out, create space around us. And so I became, from a personal perspective, really interested in how that transition can be done in a way that is a positive transition. And Tom, obviously, you've hinted that for you, it can be a positive transition. It's a little bit of it's what you make of it. But I think sometimes that really identifying how to make that a positive transition, how to really get the support that you need to make that transition successfully, and really sort of starting to connect with groups and people that are going to fill your life, if you will, when your nest becomes a little bit emptier.
And that's why I know that's one reason why I know I continue to run and sign up for so many road races is that connection. So you've done a lot of research on it, and you've indicated that there's a higher risk of depression and alcoholism and eating disorders when the empty nest arrives. So what is the empty nest syndrome, and how does it affect us? And then after a commercial break, we'll get into, once you recognize that, what are some of the things you can do to make it an opportunity as opposed to a depressive thing?
So. Sure, absolutely. So as I started to do a little more research on what empty nesting was all about, one of the things that that I came across with some research was that there, on top of all the flood of emotions that one might have around that transition, that there is an increase in some cases in sort of depression and low feelings, things surrounding sort of loneliness and emptiness. And those are things that can come with a variety of reasons. As a personal trainer and nutrition coach, what I found most interesting was I was able to tap in from a personal perspective into what a lot of my clients and people that I come in contact with in my classes may or may not be experiencing. Because as we all know, we're all in various phases of all this. And so that we may be experiencing these at different times. What I really found interesting was, of course, was the disordered eating piece from a nutrition coach perspective. To me, it became very personal as to, well, why would that be? And how can we as coaches really start to build skills for those of us who have the ability to work with clients to help them through that transition? And wrapped into that really becomes sort of the overall feeling of the way we feel about ourselves. And that's kind of where my interest came in wrapping some of this into what I considered to be overall health and wellness, and carrying that through the fitness and nutrition areas of my expertise.
Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Here we are, October 13th and 14th, and with me is Liz Durant, who has become an expert on the empty nest syndrome and how to make an opportunity out of it. And I was kind of kidding with Liz. I think there's definitely a book in the making, and of course, you know, Liz has an impressive bio in terms of her athletic feats, but her ability to be a trainer and mentor. So talk about the Pawtuckaway race this weekend, and then I'll mention one race, and then we'll get right into, okay, now that we've described the empty nest syndrome, where do I start to kind of overcome that?
Sure. First off, the Pawtuckaway race is the Vulcan's Fury, which is going to be held. It's held this weekend, and it's a long course and a short course over trails over in Pawtuckaway State Park. A challenging race for those people who love to be out on the trails, sponsored by Acidotic Racing and Chris Dunn.
Super. And the race that I referenced around the lake in Manchester is Missy's Hope, and that raises money for prevention of domestic violence, and that's at 10 o'clock in Manchester. So, okay, so you've kind of described the empty nest syndrome in sort of the recognition of it. So what are some of the ideas, like focusing on your spouse and so forth? And then let's get into how do we, you know, get started?
Sure, absolutely. So empty nest syndrome is not a disease per se. It is sort of a transition. It's more of a transition in the process of our lives for the most part. And I think that with proper strategies and tools and things like that, that we can navigate through that time of what next, skillfully, but also very opportunistically. And I think that's one of the things, as you said, the recognition of this transition occurring is one of the first steps, I think, in making those movements toward really filling your life up with things that maybe you have put off, maybe you have not tried yet, things that maybe need a little bit more attention that you've had to sort of put aside on the back burner for a little bit. And so, yes, focus on some other things is one of the first things that we can do when we make that transition. If you have a spouse, focusing on that spouse a little bit more. I think one of the things that I did personally that I found to help transition was to sort of change up our weekend routines. For years, we had spent our lives on the sidelines of sports fields or at swim meets. I wasn't quite sure how those weekends were going to look once there were no kids left at home. So for me, it was really sitting down and identifying maybe how to change up our weekend routines to do things as a couple that maybe we hadn't done for a long time or we hadn't done at all. And so I think that's one of the things that you can do without having to do a lot of planning, because there's so many great things to do here, even in New Hampshire locally. Even the museum trail, that's a great one that you can do that might be different than you haven't done before. Exploring a new interest together, finding something that maybe you wanted to try, talked about trying, but haven't yet. One of the things, of course, is focusing on family, getting a little bit more of a connection maybe with some family members that you haven't seen as much of or talked to as much as. Both my sisters live on the West Coast, one in Canada and one in the far Pacific Northwest. I don't see them often, but I spend a little bit more time connecting with them these days than I had in the past.
And that's a great one. What I've started to do is my I have four sisters, and they're also scattered everywhere. And so when I take a business trip, and if I'm in that area, like last week in Florida, two of my sisters are down there. In the old days, I would fly in for the business meter and fly home. But now what I do is I try to extend the trip on either side so that I make it a point of connecting with my sisters, even if they may have to. Florida's a big state, so even if they have to make a 2-hour drive, but we make a concerted effort to get together. So I really, when I was preparing for the show, I really liked that one, because that's easy to do, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think getting creative a little bit too, whether it's a business trip. I had the first weekend with my two sisters ever last fall. It was the first time ever the three of us had done anything together for my youngest sister's 50th birthday. So that was something that I had never made happen before, and it was a great opportunity to do it, but it really was just that. It was an opportunity around her birthday for the three of us to spend 4 days together, which we had never done before. One of the things I love is the idea of a digital dinner table, because I think that's one of the biggest things that changes is all of a sudden you don't have more people in the house to have meals with. And so a digital dinner table would be something along the lines of creating a group text with your family members, whether it's your immediate family or extended. We did that, and it was amazing how all of a sudden we had sort of conversations that were occurring through this texting that were things that were funny. People were posting funny pictures. People were posting what they were doing. But it was actually conversation and that we would have had around a dinner table if we had all been together. And it creates a little bit of that connection still. And although the idea of using smartphones to stay connected isn't ideal in this situation, when you know you're not going to be together, it does create just another opportunity for it.
Exactly. I mean, we all understand that technology has really started to really take over our lives. But if with the proper balance, you can actually use it, you know, for those connections. That's a great point. And then I like this one, too, the focusing on friends. When I was skiing a lot at Mount Sunapee with families, you know, as the families, as the kids aged out of the program, some of us stay together. And I know I make it a point to try to connect at least, you know, once a year with people that I skied with when their kids were younger. And I like that idea, that idea too. That was awesome. And then, of course, what you had mentioned about earlier, you know, starting to take care of yourself. And that's what I started to get into, you know, mindfulness and in meditation. So all of this sounds good. They're listening to us too. But how do I get started if I'm sort of now struggling with the melancholy of an emptiness?
Sure. And I think, you know, once the recognition sort of is there that this transition is going to occur, you know, I think we all experience a little bit of denial going into it, that this is actually going to be happening. And then once we get to a place where we start to see opportunities, one of the first things is really to sort of sit down and identify what matters most to you. Clearly, all these ideas are great, but to try to implement all of these at once may not be realistic. For a lot of people, the transition to an empty nest is really a time to really look at their profession and what they're doing as a career. It may be they decide that this is the right time for them to make a big change in their lives. And that's a big rock, as we call it. And that may take all the energy and time you have, which is great, but that may be what matters to you most. So really identifying what matters most first, I think, is really the best place to start. And then look at what you're doing currently and how you might want to change that. You know, one of the things that I do with sort of my coaching is a lot of change, behavior change. And mine is mostly related around, you know, health and wellness and fitness and nutrition. And we talk about it in terms of making small changes. Obviously, to decide the day you drop your student off at college or that you're going to change everything might be a little unrealistic, but certainly taking small steps toward that and being able to sit down and sort of identify and articulate those a little bit is, I think, a really helpful way to start with those planning process, with the planning process, and then really start to identify some action steps around that. One of the things that we talk a lot about in our area of wellness and nutrition is limiting beliefs or things we believe we cannot do. And one of the exercises that I went through with a group of my very close friends is I asked them all to share with me what they saw in me that I didn't necessarily see in myself. And I think that if we can identify our limiting beliefs a little bit and we can really identify what those areas are that we maybe need to start believing in ourselves a little bit more, we see more opportunities start to come our way. And as I tell my kids, they need to be ready to receive.
So when you went through that exercise with your friends, that opened some possible, they remarked on some of your characteristics and you said, oh my God, I didn't realize, you know, that I could do this or that. It's kind of like gave you sort of the confidence that you could get out of your comfort zone.
Absolutely. And I think what we underestimate sometimes are the skills and the knowledge that we do have. By the time we do transition to an empty nest, we underestimate the amount of time, effort, skills, knowledge we've gained over those years, whether it's professionally or personally, and how to employ those. But really identifying what of those are really the most important, and then really sitting down and figuring out, well, what steps do I need to take to move myself in that direction? From a self-care perspective, I rank that way at the top of things that should be most important to people as they transition to an empty nest, because I think that from that flows a lot of the other aspects of fulfillment. And if we feel good about ourselves and we feel good about the way that we approach our wellness and our health, that will often sort of carry over into our professional life. It'll carry over into our responsibilities maybe in the community. And really is, I think, the foundation from which to grow. And that's why I spend a lot of time sort of focusing on those areas of self-care.
So let me summarize sort of the seven big rocks, and then I'll give you the last word. So be open to the possibilities. Take small actions, one step at a time. That's what I always say. Rome wasn't built in a day, so taking the small steps. Make a difference. One of the things that I'm into is, picking, two or three charities or not-for-profits, that you have passion for and try to make a difference in people's lives. Managing stress during busy times, and that's how I got into mindfulness. Build strong relationships. I think, as we all know, when you're on your deathbed, you're probably not going to say, geez, I wish I spent more time at the office. It's probably more that I connected more with family and friends. Be present in the moment. That's mindfulness. And eliminate limiting beliefs. So thank you for taking up this field, and I think it's needed, and I really do think there's a book ready for you to write on this topic with all your research, and of course you are a role model for so many. Give me a 30-second summary on this field, and I'll get you on again soon.
Sure, absolutely, and thank you again for having me this afternoon. I think most importantly is to really acknowledge that this transition is something that you're not alone in. There are lots of people out in the field, in this area especially, there are lots of people that are there to help you through that. Certainly having somebody to help you through that, it can sometimes ease that transition, but also really be open to what there is out there and don't be afraid to have that conversation with friends or family or another professional about the way you're feeling during this transition. The idea is to come out on the other side with all kinds of ideas of what is possible and not what is impossible.
If someone wanted to contact you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Best way to find me is either through Facebook at Affinity Fitness on Facebook, or you can also find me at affinityfitness603@gmail.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Liz Duran, for spending this weekend with me. Great topic, empty nest, but a full life.